Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer, cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Downton Abbey, Pain and Glory, and By the Grace of God. Now, on the surface, I will say this, on the surface, this looks like there's a theme.
Well, there is a theme, but their theme is a very primal one, which is namely these are all foreign films, which is to say they are all non-American, they are all from overseas. However, the first one is in the English language because Downton Abbey is, as one might expect, a British film. And I will say right now that these are all good movies in very different ways. So let's start off with Downton Abbey. This is directed by Michael Engler, and it was written by Julian Fellowes, who originated the TV series Downton Abbey. Now, it's a little I've been putting off seeing Downton Abbey for a while. It's quite a long while since I watched I watched some seasons of the original series, the TV series. And I liked it a lot, but eventually I got sort of tired of it. And then when the movie came out, I thought, well, you know, that's sort of in the past. It seems to be the thing right now to have sort of movies that follow up on big TV series. But, you know, going to see the movie a few days ago, I really had a good time at it. I really liked it a lot, and I was very glad that I went. So first of all, for people who remember the series, and even people who don't, it has mainly the same characters in it, played by the same actors, who have certainly gotten older since the series began. And so we have people like, I'll just mention a couple, Maggie Smith and Elizabeth McGovern and Imelda Staunton and various other people. And they're all in it. And what the movie Downton Abbey focuses on is that royalty is coming to visit. Yes, this is still, for those not familiar with the series, is a fabulously wealthy British estate from the days when there were lots of those in Britain, and everybody is extremely aristocratic. And then there is, of course, the downstairs. There are the servants, and even they are pretty darn aristocratic because they all live in this very posh environment. And royalty is coming to visit. The king and queen are going to come and visit, and they're going to stay only over one night at Downton Abbey. So everybody is very excited about this and very pleased about this, and everybody is scurrying about making preparations. And then it turns out that when the king comes to visit, the king brings his own aunt. Entourage. Everybody comes along with the king. So the cook who is looking forward to cooking for the king finds out she won't be cooking for the king because the king's own cook will be coming along. And the king's own everything will be coming along. And so this causes consternation in a lot of quarters. And the people have to adjust to this new reality, and eventually some of the servants come up with a very clever scheme to impishly put some of the king's entourage out of action so that they can take over and actually do all these things for the king, which is what they had wanted to do. In the meanwhile, various other subplots are unfolding. For example, the king's or the queen's lady-in-waiting turns out to be an old kind of rival and acquaintance and I guess relative of Violet Crawley, the Maggie Smith character, and there's been some tension between those going back over the years, and the question is that going to work out? And all of this has to do with the lady-in-waiting's plan to leave her fortune to a girl who she adopted and made into her maid, and then this turns out to have all kinds of complications, the kinds of things you might expect from aristocratic families with secrets, etc., etc., etc. Now, I enjoyed the movie of Downton Abbey, not so much because of all the plot stuff, as because of the performances. These are people, for the most part, who have settled into their roles over the years. They really know these characters. They play them with great ease and affection. But mainly, I really like the pace of it. Michael Engler keeps this film moving along. The plot moves along very rapidly. It's a very fleet movie. movie, fleet on its feet. The plot moves along, the characters move along, the dialogue moves along. I just found it kind of invigorating in a way, and I just had a nice time with it. Maybe some of that is nostalgia for the series, which again I enjoyed years ago when I watched it, but mainly I just really like the movie for itself. So I think that even if people have had no exposure whatever to Downton Abbey, they'll have a good time at it. It's very enjoyable drama, comedy drama, one might even say, and people who, I think pretty much everybody will have a good time with Downton Abbey. So I'm really glad that I caught up with it. I have to mention that Simon Jones, who I used to know years ago, haven't seen in a while. He was a big star of Brideshead Revisited, another very great British series of years ago, plays the king. And it was also a great pleasure to see him come on board the Downton Abbey crew. Again, I think people who enjoyed the series will have a good nostalgic time with the movie. People who have had no experience whatever to the movie, excuse me, to the series, should enjoy the movie just for its own sake. It's a nice movie. Pain and Glory is a Spanish film written and directed by the pretty great Pedro Almodovar, who I also knew slightly many years ago. Pedro Almodovar is far and away the most important filmmaker to emerge from Spain in maybe the last 30 years, and one of the most important filmmakers ever to emerge from Spain. A very, very, very important filmmaker on the world scene. He's made many, many great films, All About My Mother, Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, Matador, all kinds of important films, some much better than others, I must say. Pain and Glory really ranks with his better films. I won't say his very, very best. Probably Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, which was his big breakthrough hit back in the late 80s, is his best film. But Pain and Glory is a really good one. And it's much more serious than some of his films. He's made some movies which are really serious. But he's also made a lot of pretty wild and wacky comedies. This is definitely one of the more serious ones. It's also probably the most autobiographical film that he has ever made. It stars Antonio Banderas, giving one of his best performances ever, probably. And he plays a version of Pedro Almodovar himself. The movie is not directly autobiographical, but I would say it is semi-autobiographical. And Antonio Banderas plays a filmmaker like Almodovar himself. He is a filmmaker and he is getting on in years a little bit. And in the early part of the film, we have a whole lot of material about his various physical and psychological ailments. He's got various physical problems and he's got sort of a depression problem. So the story gets kicked off when he gets a visit from a, he actually, I should say, gets together with an actor who acted in a movie of his years ago. And they had a tremendous falling out because the filmmaker himself, whose name is Salvador, did not like the performance given by the actor. And it turns out there's an interesting reason why he didn't like the performance. The character was supposed to be a cocaine addict, the character in this movie that these two made years ago, and was supposed to be very manic and hyper. And instead, the actor gave a very downbeat, sort of depressive performance. And the reason turns out to be that the actor was actually taking heroin at the time. So he's supposed to be playing a manic drug addict. And instead, he ended up playing the role as a sort of a depressive drug addict. And the two had a falling out. Now, years, decades later, the movie has been restored. It is going to be shown again to audiences. It's going to have a big premiere. And there is a big push on for the director and the actor to get together and sort of present this movie anew to the public, this movie they made years ago, which was the cause of the great quarrel between them. So now they get together again. It turns out the actor is still a heroin addict. And he now, in the present day, gets the old director kind of taking drugs himself. So now the two of them have a drug problem at this exact moment that they're supposed to be presenting this movie afresh and also sort of renewing their ruptured friendship from years ago. Now, what makes all of this more complicated still is the fact that the movie takes place in three different time periods. We have many flashbacks to the time when the director was a little boy living with his mother, played by the wonderful Penelope Cruz. We also have scenes in the 1960s, when the various things were happening involving these two characters. And then we have scenes in the present day when the two of them are getting together again years and years after their friendship was ruptured by this quarrel over drugs and cinema and various other things. The movie sounds a little complicated. It's actually as clear as a bell when you watch it. It moves along very rapidly. Again, it's a movie that has a really good pace to it. It has wonderful performances. I would mention especially Antonio Banderas as the main character and Penelope Cruz as his mother when he was a little boy. We also have another actress playing his mother. Juliana Serrano plays his mother as an old woman. And again, the movie unfolds in these three different time periods. It is not a movie about drug addiction, although that plays an important part in the story. It is not a movie about childhood, although that plays an important part in the story. And it is not a movie about, although it very much involves, homosexuality, Almodovar having been always a very openly gay director. And that is a theme in this movie, but it is not the dominating strand of this movie. None of these things really dominate. All these various things, the idea of having a gay identity, by the way, a long-ago lover of the film director comes into the story late in the film and becomes a very important character for a little while. So it is not a movie about drugs. It is not a movie about gay identity. It's not even a movie about filmmaking. It is about all of those things and a couple of more things I don't have time to mention. And again, it weaves all these things into a very effortlessly told, multi-leveled movie. Fans of Pedro Almodovar should enjoy this movie enormously. Those who have never seen any of his films, it would be a good way into his movies. Because again, it's a very autobiographical film and a film where the filmmaker reveals a lot about himself while still maintaining just enough mystery about it to keep us intrigued. Our third movie today, By the Grace of God, was written and directed by François Ozon, a very important director whose movies very often have a kind of a sexual fluidity to them and very often a kind of impish, mischievous quality. Neither of those things figures into the By the Grace of God, which is about a very, very serious subject. It is based on a case, this French film is based on a case, a real French legal case from not that many years ago, where a young man, let's say going on middle age, who was abused by a priest in his youth, decides decades later that the time has come for him to take a stand about this. He has never gotten over it. He actually has a very successful life in a whole lot of ways. He is a very happy family man with many children, but he never got over being abused by a priest. And again, this movie is based on a very real case and follows the facts quite directly. And so he decides he is now going to go public, and he is trying to get this priest outed. Because the priest, who at the time was reassigned, as has so often happened in cases like this, still is able, even though the priest is now an old man, to work with children, to run catechism classes, to be around children all the time. And our main character of the film, whose name is Alexandre, decides that he now wants to do something about this. And so he goes to the cardinal, who really ought to do something about this, and confronts the cardinal and confronts the priest. The priest admits to everything, but the cardinal says, well, it would be too much of a scandal. We really don't want to chastise the priest publicly. And so Alexandre, the young man who was abused years ago, refuses to let this go. Now, something really interesting happens roughly halfway through the movie, By the Grace of God, which is that Alexandre starts to look for other victims. One of the problems in his campaign to have this priest punished is that the statute of limitations has passed. So legally, there's nothing he can do about legally advancing his case against this priest. So he goes looking for other victims of the priest years ago. There were lots and lots of victims, it turns out, and looking for those especially who might have been just recent enough that the statute of limitations has not run out. So what happens that's interesting is that he finds another man who joins him in the crusade, and this other man now becomes really the main character of the film for quite a while. So the movie, as Ozon himself has said, the writer-director has said, is like a relay race, where now a second character sort of picks up the baton and runs it with it for a while, and then the two men who have been involved in the movie so far, including the two main characters, find a third man. And he picks up the baton and becomes the main character of the film for the last portion. The earlier characters don't go away, but a new character becomes the main character. Very interesting that two of these three main characters are, again, They are very successful people who have gotten over their sexual trauma without completely getting over it. They still remember it and feel very bitter about it. The third man is somebody who's apparently his life really was disrupted by all of this. He has an abusive relationship with a female partner, and apparently his life really was pretty messed up by what happened years ago. And all of them still feel very strongly about this. And the whole suspense of the movie develops mainly from the growing movement that these men put together. They start a website. They start really putting their story out before the public and looking for other people who might want to contribute to their effort to get justice within the church and justice outside the church. And we eventually find out at the end of the film whether justice was ever actually achieved. The movie never becomes about the abusive priest, although he's a character in it. The movie is really about these men who were abused years ago and their search for justice in the present day. It's a slow-moving movie in some respects, but it's a very dramatic film with a lot of suspense, and it's, again, it's about a subject just as real as a subject can be, a kind of story that took place in the movie Spotlight, which in a way this film is kind of a tribute to. It's sort of taking off from the American movie Spotlight, but this film tells it in a very French context, a very European context, and thereby gives a different slant on the story. I found it very dramatic. I've seen it more than once. It certainly, again, is about a subject as important as a subject can be, and I hope it finds a terrific viewership here in the United States. And so that is my somewhat international story this week, Jill.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Downton Abbey, Pain and Glory, and By the Grace of God.